excited.
I'm excited. Hello folks, welcome back to the Doccast. I'm your host, Peter Pedlow, and I'll be joined today by my good buddies, who I have missed dearly, having been away on annual leave, Craig Hart and Matthew Halls. So get yourself revved up for another fact-filled show with today's episode, episode number 4. We will cover off two topics, time permitting, franchise versus agency, the battle for the future of new car sales, and are customers really downsizing their used cars? What do we think about that? So boys, what is the agency model?
So the agency model, in a nutshell, is whereby the franchise dealer is no longer the focal point of the sale, ultimately, right, in that regard. And the customer places an order directly with the OEM, and then they name their preferred delivering dealer as a result of that. But obviously, there's many impacting factors from that, which we will no doubt come on and cover off during this podcast.
Yeah. You make a really interesting point, because from a dealer's perspective, and having been a car salesman many years ago, it's that whole naming your preferred collection point. Mm-hmm. I was listening to an interview several days ago with the CEO of Polestar. So Polestar are the only current agency business, I suppose, out there, and they do have, so Lookers have a good relationship with them so far, and they've plenty of other franchise partners. But the way they operate it is, if you're live in London, as an example, and you rock up into Manchester for the day, you go into Lookers Manchester Polestar showroom, you have a look at a vehicle, and you go, I'm going to go and order that vehicle. You go online, you order it, even though Lookers will have spent time with you, maybe taking you for a test drive and everything else, it'll just be delivered to your nearest Polestar. Mm-hmm. And they will do the many ways, they get the glory, if that makes sense. So having been a salesperson, there's definitely potential risk, I think, in that, from a perspective of what level of service are they going to provide to somebody who's outside of their postcode. If they rock up knowing full well that I'm never going to get the profit out of this one, I'm never going to get the big juicy commission, crack on, bit mister, car's over there, yeah, go and have a look, there's the keys.
But then there's another step to that. If they name the preferred supplier and dealer for you, it's the next locality to that next dealership, if that makes sense, in terms of, if you think, going off piece slightly, but if you think of a franchise McDonald's, for example, there's a certain radius between the location of the restaurant.
Yeah, absolutely.
And my point, it will be relevant around dealer locations moving forward.
Yeah.
So that will have the same implications.
Potentially, Polestar don't have a huge amount of franchise partners or relationship partners. I'm not really sure, you know, how they classify it. I know full well, if you're in London, you're in Manchester for the day, that's not going to happen with every customer. The majority of consumers will just search in their local area who has Polestar, and it'll rock up to there. So that's kind of few and far between. But taking it right back, I suppose, from our perspective, taking it right back, because we've jumped into some challenges. But to your point around what is the agency model, you know, in the past, the traditional method is, you've got a distributor who will work on behalf of the factory. They'll distribute vehicles into a country if the manufacturer doesn't deal with it directly. Essentially, that disappears. Mm. And that will, there'll be lots of positives, there's no doubt about it. There'll be lots of positives behind that, be that as a dealer, be that as a customer, and more so from the OEMs. You know, what we already know is a whole host of manufacturers have already committed to doing that. So in the 2023, so next year, Alfa Romeo and DS, so part of the Stellantis group, have already set their timeline for middle of next year to move fully into agency. There are other parts of Fiat, Vauxhall, Peugeot, and Citroën that are going to move into elements of it. Volkswagen, Mercedes.
Volkswagen are doing it with their fully electric range, aren't
they? Yeah, absolutely, they are. They're doing it already. So if you wanted to buy an ID5, an ID4, yeah, it just operates on agency. But the Volkswagen Group have had a form of agency, crikey, for the last 20 years. Like, I remember selling Audis back in 05, 06. Volkswagen or Audi or Skoda or whomever would have done a big fancy deal with some lease company. Their terms would sit outside of traditional, maybe fleet terms or traditional retail terms, and they'd rock up and they'd say, this is who I partner with. You know, this is, it's a Lexus lease vehicle. You'd be like, oh, frick, that's an agency deal. Mm-hmm. So instead of maybe making £1,000 or £1,500 of you know, chassis profit, you're working for £200 or £300, and it doesn't count towards your target. Mm-hmm. So you used to hate the thought of an agency coming through because it didn't do anything for your business. But absolutely, you know, there's been a lot of change in Volkswagen Group. They've changed their after sales setups. They've completely restructured their sales organization across the UK and Europe. Volvo, I think one of the big ones at the minute is Mercedes. So there's quite a lot of talk about what's going on in Australia. I don't know if any of you have seen, but there's been a lot of noise. There's a £650 million lawsuit currently in court for Mercedes, where the Mercedes dealers have taken Mercedes to court on the basis of, you asked us what our views were on agency model, we told you we didn't want it, and you forced it on us, so we're taking you to court for £650 million. Good.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy, absolutely crazy.
Unfortunately, you probably know who the winner's going to be in that one, right?
And interestingly, actually, Mercedes-Benz have indicated by the end of 2023 that 50% of their sales for both cars and vans are expected to come and be sold under the agency model.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that lawsuit may, you know, but we, as you say,
I think we know the biggest driver in the way that this purchase is soon to be made is the consumer, right? From a consumer's perspective, making it easy, making price alignment, I think is really a big thing as well, consistent pricing. Because currently I could go into, I don't know, a Volkswagen dealership in Reading and get a deal, and then I could go into a London one and get a slightly better deal, say for instance, on the same car, because yeah, they buy that vehicle and then they've got their margin. It depends how they're doing to target or what time of the month is how good a deal I can get. So there's inconsistencies. With it moving to this model, it may become a consistent price across the country as such for make and model.
And that's the benefit to the OEM. They control the pricing. Yeah,
exactly.
Right, and then it's the supply and dealer, again, which I believe OEMs will dictate the markup in individual asset profitability, yes, per unit. So,
yeah,
whereas to your point, Craig, currently, in LCVs as well, right? You can just go online, you'll see 42% saving, yeah, on new vehicles.
Yeah.
So that will, again, the benefit to the OEM is they'll stabilize and they will control the pricing.
I think one of the really interesting things for me is around, if you're in the market to buy a new car, chances are you'll want to drive that car before you commit to it.
Yeah.
So then with that process of saying, right, well, how do I do that? Do I go to an experience center, a nice shiny dealership as such, or can we even call it a dealership anymore? Where you can go and see that vehicle, you can touch it, you can feel it, and you're talking to product experts before you then maybe commit to doing that online. If you think of the Bensons for bed analogy, which I've just had at the weekend, I went out, I looked at a mattress, committed to it, paid a 10% deposit, and was sent a link for finance, 0%.
Did you try and test it?
Didn't try and test it. My wife actually said, lay on your front, like, how are you, like, lay on your front,
lay on your back up.
So, but my point is, it's that kind of similar process, right? I could, in however many years' time, go into a dealership, touch, feel, drive the car, and they go, right, do you like it? Yes, okay, well, if I take a deposit from you now, you can do the finance online, we can sort out delivery, et cetera, et cetera. So it's that consumer-led process. I think that's making this happen. And it's almost one of the last industries to do it anyway.
It's been driven by the OEMs.
Mm.
It's not being driven by customers at all. Customers just want the best deal possible. You know, being that, and that's absolutely, and that's why they shop about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, back to when I used to sell cars, you know, there were two Audi dealerships in Northern Ireland. Both were owned by the same business. You had a captive market, you know. So what we used to find, people would have come in having phoned Glasgow, having phoned Edinburgh, having phoned London, Manchester, to kind of price compare us to say, this is the price I've got, they're going to deliver it to me, are you prepared to kind of do something with it? Agency model kind of just strips all that away, you know, strips all that away completely. From a manufacturer perspective, they are absolutely driving this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Matt already, you know, hit on the point kind of briefly earlier around the margin side of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, electric vehicles cost four times as much to make as a petrol vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So manufacturers are looking at the fact of, are margins being squeezed on the vehicles? Because clearly they've still got to hit a price point in order to be able to sell them. So their margin is being squeezed and they're going, what can we do? You know, where can we make a few quid? I tell you where can we make a few quid. Our dealers are typically making 15% on the chassis. We're going to go after and have a piece of that. And the agency model is the only way that they can really get into that kind of sphere. And I think secondly, they then own the customer. So there, it gives them the ability across the customer's lifetime with them, be that 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, whatever period of time the customer keeps the vehicle, the manufacturer has the right to directly market to them. You know, if they capture enough data on that customer, you know, the way electric vehicles are now, the amount of information that they're storing and that they'll be sharing backwards with, you know, there's, you know, you think about your Tesla as an example, you know, all the different add-ons you can have from a technology perspective, Netflix, Spotify and everything else, that all runs through Tesla. They're all getting probably a wee bit of change out of that.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm Volkswagen as an example, and I know, you know what, Craig's got a dog, I'm going to, you know, add Craig to the dog enlist. And when it comes to, you know, doing a special deal on dog guards, I know I can target Craig. Craig, you know, you need a dog guard for your wee woof. It's 110 quid, big guy. You really are monetizing the customer. And we know data is the gold now. You know, that is where the money is. So I think, you know, that there's two clear reasons why OEMs want to move into that kind of area. Yeah.
Is that, but on the data source, if you look at current state, though, and think about historical data that, you know, individual dealers have, for example, their legacy, their own repeat customers, which the OEMs won't have.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of what happens with those existing customers, right? And does that get sold into the, you know, there's that consideration.
Whose data is it, right?
Yeah, yeah. Who owns that data? Well, who has the right to that data?
So if you think about it, you know, customer who's bought a new car in the past, that data will have gone to the OEM at the point of order. So, you know, when you're placing, so for example, you know, if go back to my Renault days, you know, working as an area manager, I could tell you exactly, we had every piece of information we had on a customer that the dealer captured, because they had to put it into our ordering system.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, name, age, date of birth, you know, where they lived, what they were currently driving, that's all captured. So that, you know, manufacturers will have all of that data. And then bolt on to the side of that, their own captive finance houses. So, you know, Renault have RCI, you know, they will have all the finance side of things as well. So they've already got that data, the market to an extent, but they still don't own the customer, because the customer in theory in the past has been owned by the dealer. The challenge will be moving forward, I suppose, is if I'm a dealer who's got an agency agreement with you as a manufacturer, when the customer rocks in, be that, should I have to capture that information for myself? Because I'll be thinking, I've got a really good used forecourt out there that I need to, you know, that's where I'm going to be making the money. You know, yes, I might get a half decent commission off the new stuff, but I need customers on site. I need to capture as much data as you come on. And you know what? You're maybe here to talk about a new Polestar. I've got a 6-month-old one here, mister. You know, what about, you know, forget about the new one. What about we put you into that one?
I just had this like vision in my head of like a dealership where you've got loads of used out the front with loads of salespeople bombing around. And then if a consumer comes in and says, I want to buy a new one, you just point to this one guy over in the corner who's sat with a laptop and a model, says, oh, that's me. And just that one person, whereas you've got, it's really, really interesting point though, because the used market, you're right, they're going to still, well, we know manufacturers have heavily reliant on used over the past couple of years. Yes, manufacturing for new is going to ramp up. So that is the need to sell so many used, hopefully the prices will align, etc. As we know, they're kind of leveling out. But it was funny, you can ask, it's for someone who doesn't, who's maybe listening, who doesn't know how a dealer principal would feel heading into this, because we've read online that some are happy enough with it, but there's some out there who are damn right not happy about it and feel it's going to massively affect them and their businesses. How are those people? How are they going to head into it? What are they going to do?
Yeah, I think there are some positives. You know, across the last 2 years, we know that the new car market has had challenges. OEMs have started to realise we don't need to make the same amount of vehicles, and by making less vehicles, we can actually make far more money.
Yeah, because the price.
And I think that's where the agency model will work. You know, prior to COVID, the market was forced every single year. You know, big dealer groups were forced into taking thousands upon thousands of pre-registered vehicles every single month. So when we look at 2.1, 2.2 or 2.3, you know, million registrations in the new car market, probably a million units of that would have been pre-registered across the year.
And
that manufacturers will no longer have the ability to force the market. The only way they're going to have the ability to force the market is to put on some form of a special offer that might go, you know, a bit like what a dealer would do. I'm getting close to my target. I still need to find maybe 4 or 5, you know, units. So I'm going to go out to my local customers. I'm going to offer an additional £500.
Weekend special.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, you know, you're going to hammer it in that way. And that brings me to another probably challenge, because again, having worked for an OEM, the one things that OEMs are good at is national marketing.
Mm.
The one area where they struggle and have historically struggled, and that's why they need a dealer network, is local marketing. Yeah. You know, how's that going to work moving forward?
But if they're good enough to be doing their online advertising well enough, then surely that will help cover that, right?
And that's the valid point, right? Yeah. Some of these independents or brokers in the market who have, you know, very complex marketing strategies to retain existing customers, you know, source new clientele, which I go as far as saying their marketing strategy are better than some of the OEMs in that regard. So,
but it goes back to
that additional client base, and that's my point, which I'm thinking about certain dealership when I'm saying this, is there's the brokers out there who operate in that space who will be materially impacted by that agency model. There's no doubt about it. And you mentioned, obviously, Stellantis Group. I know 2023 is a focus for them on migrating to that model. And I think of a number of dealers will be certainly impacted by that in terms of their current buying power. You know, they theoretically buy in bulk right now, which sets them aside from any other broker in the market.
Yeah.
That will certainly change their
proposition. They're a middleman,
really. But I suppose there's nothing to say, because we know so little about agency currently, because I think, as I said, Polestar are the only kind of OEM that have an agency model kind of on the go. But until there's a lot more detail lands, until, you know, it kind of ticks through and
you'll see people do it right and people do it wrong.
Yeah, oh, there's no doubt about it. And there's plenty of manufacturers have said, not getting involved in it. You know, Dale Wyatt of Suzuki, he's very, very vocal on all forms of social media. You know, LinkedIn, he did a couple of interviews recently where he went, it doesn't work for us. We don't want to get involved in it. That's not to say that the business might not change its mind across the next couple of years. You know, if it was me and I was an OEM and I was responsible for a country, you probably would just want to sit back a wee bit. Because if you rush into it, that's where mistakes are kind of made. And it's been okay for Polestar, because Polestar have just landed new into the market. They haven't had, you know, they haven't had the change relationships with anybody else. You know, it was just, this is our business model, this is how we operate.
It's a very unique business as well. It's very different to your everyday kind of Volkswagen, Ford kind of mass market stuff.
Completely.
But I think, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with it for sure.
What do we think about customers? Where are customers going to benefit?
Consistent pricing, I think, will be the big one. You know, they'll know that wherever they go, it's the same price, whether that's good or bad, but they just know that it will be done. I mean, everyone likes a deal. You can get a deal on a used car, but on a new, that's where the manufacturers are going to have to bring deals in, as you said, maybe where then they're pushing for a big quarter, etc. But there is still that, and I'll keep going back to this, there's a couple of things that you need to go and touch and feel before you buy. One is a car, the second is a mattress. But you do need to do that. You know, if you think about Tesla, say for instance, when it comes to this direct selling, when you go onto their website and you click on a model, there's two buttons you can press. One says test drive and one says order. That's where they're pushing. So the consumer's got two choices at that point. Model 3, Model Y. What do I want to do first? Test drive, book it for a local place, go and have a look at it. Second is order. So that, from a consumer perspective, the dealership saying, test drive, then order it online, do this, blah, blah, blah. There's a kind of like a cooling off period with the car because they'll take it back into inventory, set it back on. You know, that process from a consumer perspective is what we used to on a lot of stuff. You use Amazon Prime with one click buy.
Yeah.
There's a reason why they designed it to be like that, because it's made to be easy. And we're going off piece here a little bit, but from an online consumer perspective, I think it's big.
Yeah.
It's good for them.
And to your point, you can think about the cost of buying an asset like a car or a van for that matter, and then you think the next closest to that in an expensive purchase, I think about watches, for example, and you think about the buying a watch, talk about the consumer experience, and that experience you get for buying a watch, you go into you sit down, you go through that process whereby, you know, it's a very professional process for buying a watch. And to probably to Craig's point, you know, through this agency model, would you get that same process for buying a car in that current process if you can't go and touch and feel it? I'm not saying you can't do that, but that's the
it's probably more future proofing it, because you know, let's be really honest, you know, you and I, when it comes to buying a watch, Rolex, Tags, you know, whatever you're into, Omegas, you probably want to go and see it, you probably want that experience, you know, you want to be spoiled a wee bit because it's a big chunk of change that you're paying for it. But our kids in 15 years' time from now, will they be bothered about that?
If no, they've done not. The research online, they've seen it.
They'll have bought it online. You know, everything they do is online. They play with their friends online. You know, everything is online. And, you know, I was in the barber's the other day, and he has a 17-year-old trainee in who's quite good at cutting hair, but he said his people skills are non-existent. You know, struggles to even look people in the eye. And, you know, that is a very real, I know we're going off piece a wee bit, but that's a very real challenge, right? But if you look at how they will buy cars, how they'll probably buy houses, how they'll buy beds, it's just all going to be online. Speed, ease, consistency. We've heard that phrase time and time again. That is what is going to happen with
the merchandising, the marketing piece.
Mm.
Right, if this is, you know, if it's uniformed across the board, you know, you think about the advertising medias out there, there's no requirement to therefore to push your individual brand representation in terms of the dealer community in that regard, because it's all being centralized by the OEM. So you think about potential impact that has on marketing in that regard and what that might look like.
I suppose that's where having a really strong used car forecourt and a strong used car offering, where you'll build your brand probably ever so slightly differently. But I think the next 2 years will be super interesting. You know, I've no doubt some of them might find themselves in a fight, the likes of what is happening with Mercedes in Australia. Others might just be, bring it on. You know, Duncan McPhee of Lookers was interviewed a number of months ago, and he's just, bring it on. You know, they know how well and how profitable it is for them with Polestar, and if it's a similar kind of environment with everything else, you've got less costs, you're not being lumbered with hundreds upon hundreds of pre-regs, you know, sitting aging and effectively, as we know, costing you money every single day, whether you sell it or whether you don't. So it kind of takes away all of that. But I think it's just how you structure, you know, what's a Mercedes showroom? £10 million, £15 million as an investment. Who's going to pay for that in 3-4 years' time?
Yeah.
I just think, you know, there's a lot of
the change that the motor industry has gone through in the last couple of years is probably tip of the iceberg over what will happen in the next 3-4 years. It'll be absolutely
which is probably happened through not of wanting to do it, but been forced to do it, right? With what we've gone through with everything that's happened in the world over the last 2-3 years. It's the whole subscription model stuff. Look about when we went to the British Motor Show, and we looked at that company, Elmo, is it?
Elmo, yeah, the subscription model.
Electric vehicle subscription model. Pay monthly, hand it back when you want to. They cover insurance, tax. Well, there is no tax, obviously, but you know, it's still registered, etc.
Subject to your budget for
they're a fortune. You know, when I had a look, and I think if you had 500, it was about $500.
We walked around and looked at it. Yeah, it's insane. But I suppose they're probably one of the only ones out there, so they're cashing in on this at the moment. They haven't really got much competition.
But, you know, you think about it, and I know that subscription currently is more akin to rental. You have the flexibility to kind of dip in and dip out, and you're maybe getting something relatively new. I'm just not sure how that works at a mainstream level currently, because let's face it, well, cost of living crisis and all that.
Yeah, wrong timing, right?
How many people are going to be able to afford £600-800 on a subscription for a car when you can go and pick yourself up a used 206 or whatever for a couple hundred quid? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't see. I think subscription has a lot of it's a lot of a journey to
which takes us perfectly onto our next subject.
Are we done with that subject? Are you bored?
Not too sure,
folks. That is agency. As always, if there's anything more you'd like to know more about, and clearly as I suppose as it evolves, we hear and see and find out more, we'll certainly bring it back to the podcast. But again, if you have any questions, you know how to reach out to us. The second topic we want to talk about is something that's a bit more relevant for the majority of dealers out there, and that's a headline that has been battered about by quite a few people recently, which is around the fact that customers are downsizing their used cars. Cost of living is clearly biting for everybody, regardless of, you know, how much you earn or don't earn. It is definitely biting, and it will bite hard across the next six or eight months for everybody. Are customers downsizing their used cars? Matthew, what's your view? What's the data suggesting?
Downsizing. Again, you throw into the mix, Pete, if I could, around the migration to EVs as well, and inclusion in that migration piece. But the reality is, what we're seeing is the rising cost of the cheaper electric cars because of the demand is forcing up the prices in that sector. So as a result, it's falling out of reach for a lot of consumers in the market in that regard. Again, something we covered on the prior podcast, though, is around to, you know, that sort of, we talked around the 7K budget. That's where mass market appeal is, of course. And with a lack of supply, it is encouraging, you know, the rise in those prices in the market. But absolutely, there's more and more consumers, the data suggests, who are looking to downsize either to more affordable or you know, where that, and also economical friendly in that regard, it is that mindset of consumers who approach it in that space. But in terms of the trends that we're seeing, if we look at August trends, you know, and I think about it now, and today is the 1st of September, for example, we see a change of plate to give that impact. And only 5% of consumers now are influenced by the change of plate in their next purchase. Yep. So not to go off at a piece, you asked about, you know, are consumers downsizing in that regard, but it's also all the other influencing factors that kind of play a part in that.
That's actually an interesting one. I think it's more so a case, because, you know, I read something the other day, there are kind of two pieces around that. One was they just want their car. So in days and years gone by, August would have been probably, with the exception of December, one of the worst new car months
on the basis of customers, which I want the new plate, I need the new plate, I need the newest plate.
Mm-hmm.
I think that has, people have got out of the way of that across the last couple of years. It is just, I want my new car, I'll take my new car as soon as you have it.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, you know, I've read recently that people are prepared to pay more for their new car than is required to get it sooner.
Well, it's not everything, isn't it? We want it now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every part of our lives when it comes to shopping.
And as we know, in the current climate, you know, the extenuating times are taking now for the delivery has gone from, I can relate to it, 8 months, I believe it's 12, 14 months now.
Yeah.
And consumers, you know, they place that blame then with the dealers for that delay in delivery around that. So it's the impact that then has. So if you can't have new, you then have nearly new. And that's where in situations we're seeing the cost of needing new being more expensive than new.
Yeah.
Because that immediate supply of stock.
So let me give you a live example of consumers potentially wanting to look to downsize. So my wife's got a iX35 sat on the driveway. She keeps saying to me, should we get rid of it? And I've said, yeah, let's do it. But she wants to downsize to a car that they want to go with snazzy cars here and there. And
what, she want an 80TT?
No, she wants an A3S line.
An A3S line?
Oof.
Where are you going to put the twins?
Oh, no. What twins? But my point is...
It was the fact you went, I know.
But the point is that she wants to do it because she thinks that having a SUV down to an A3 is technically downsizing, but... cost wise,
yeah, it's going to be more expensive,
and that's what I said to her. What's the insurance? What's it going to cost for the car, the running, all that lot? Which is not what she thought the process on. But I think the data from our Auto Trader have shared recently around the idea around people downsizing is search for the vehicles that were searched before are still consistent there. Yes, obviously, there's been a shift in pricing. So those vehicles that are now 2, 3, 4 years old are more expensive than what the 2, 3, 4 year old vehicles were 2, 3 years ago. So I think that's a big thing to take into account when you talk about downsizing. What do we technically mean by downsizing? Are we talking about cost saving process?
Yeah.
Or are we talking about size of vehicle?
I think it's more so the efficiency piece, running really. Costs. You know, reading an article, you know, again, a few days back where it was talking about the fact that customers from who were driving maybe 5 Series, maybe Mercedes, you know, E-classes that probably weren't the most fuel efficient, 35, 36, 37 miles per gallon, are chucking them in for Focuses and Golfs and Passats, just wanting to get more bang for their buck. And there may be an element of truth in that. But the other side of that may be more so related to the fact that the customer's budget might be £15,000, and when they bought their 5 Series 3 years ago or 4 years ago, it was £15,000. Exactly. Whereas 4 years later, £15,000 only gets them a Passat or a Focus or a Golf because of the 30% increase in used cars across the last 18 months. So I think that's where there's a wee bit of press or maybe seeing one element of the data and not truthfully looking at, you know, the bigger picture. You know,
and that's exactly the Auto Trader point. You know, they've alluded to the actual mix across price points has very much remained the same year on year. But as we're alluding to here, they're looking at the asset types that are actually older with higher mileage.
Exactly.
That they're replacing their existing vehicles.
So there's more to it than meets the eye, right? When you're actually looking at
exactly that.
Yeah, I think, you know, many people will be looking at kind of, let's try and save money.
That's it. And priorities, isn't it?
Yeah,
priorities. If you think about the summer period of those consumers that put off a delaying of a car purchase to take that family holiday.
Yeah.
And the same as we enter into the cost of living crisis, you know, the energy caps, will that also carry on? Of course it will throughout the latter months of this year. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out month on month.
So if you're a dealer, or if you were sitting facing a dealer today, what kind of top tip
would you give them?
Around buy-in?
Just around the market, the health of the market. What would be your one?
I think this if it comes to buy-in, would be to understand and read data before you make a purchase of a vehicle. It's as simple as that. Every penny counts, and I think they can't afford to make the wrong... Everyone makes the wrong decision every now and again, but you can't consistently. So I think it would be around buy-in, understanding retail ratings, stuff like that, before committing.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I guess understand where the buyers are in the market and adapt your approach, your strategy to match that of the buyers. Yeah. And obviously we know the data sources that dealers can get, you know, to acquire that. Then also it's upon acquiring it, it's then managing both your digital forecourt and your physical forecourt. So the lifestyle of stock. There's an awful lot of dealers that we know that do that very well, but there's an awful lot of dealers that there's certainly room for improvement, you know, that we certainly see on a daily basis. That would be something that I would strongly recommend around that and make use of the data sources available to you, ultimately.
Yeah.
And how about yourself, Pete? How would you...
I think that the one tip for me would be more so around smell what sells. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, Lord Sugar...
We're just talking about data when you're talking about smell what sells.
Yeah, you know, Lord Sugar always said it, you know, when he was setting the apprentices up to go out and, you know, go out and buy, you've got £1,000, go out, you know, to the wholesalers, pick up some stuff, go and sell, and then whatever money you've made, go back and invest it again. My tip to dealers would be smell what sells. So if you find that the demand is in the £5,000-£7,000 bracket, keep yourself safe, keep yourself there, keep replenishing that stock. If you've got a lot of £20,000-£25,000 of stock and you're not getting the inquiries and you're not getting, you know, leads coming through the door and you really are struggling to sell them, be aware of the retail rate and be aware of
your
pricing. You know, just make sure that, I suppose the old adage, you know, your first opportunity of profit is your best opportunity of profit. And if you get a price that's not too far away from where you are, not being afraid to just get the deal done and get that money invested into something a bit cheaper.
I think as well, you touched on earlier on, Matt, around just marketing. I think marketing nowadays, especially online marketing, is so key. And I'm not on about, yes, you might use one of the big, you know, our websites like Auto Traders, for instance, but it's the quality in which your marketing sits at on that platform, you know, around your imagery, around your quality of your adverts, around what services you do, why someone would buy something from you above the others, reviews, etc. as well, because the vehicle's the vehicle. You might land in the search because they want that vehicle, but you're up against loads of other people. So why would they go to you?
Yeah, and that, in, you know, we've been on the road traveling around visiting dealers all around the country, and, you know, there's been examples where we would know dealer partners that spend £20,000 a month and not bar an eyelid to that on their advertising spend, because they get a significant return on their investment.
They understand what their return
because
on
their
yeah.
digital forecourt is very well positioned.
Yeah.
Yet conversely, we will see dealers spending £1,000, £2,000 that don't do it very well, and then saying that certain advertising medias don't work
it's
for them.
It's their fault, yeah.
But
yeah,
it's
yeah.
down to that whole digital forecourt representation, why they're not getting the return on their investment, right? So,
absolutely.
Yeah, but again, that's where obviously, you know, there's advice and guides around that can help them to get a better return on their investment.
That's it, folks. It's been emotional. It's episode 4 in the bag.
Now, what I would say though, we keep mentioning this every episode, if there's any topics, any subjects that anyone out there wants us to cover off, please don't hesitate to reach out through the various formats of doing that.
Doesn't always need to be, you know, motor industry. You know, if you want to know the health of our fantasy football teams, we'll certainly give you an update. I've had an absolute shocker the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, yeah, you have.
And gone from being top 2 to about 19. It's brutal. But yeah, if you want any kind of tips on that, any other data sources, absolutely. If you want to know which mattress is the best mattress to buy out of... Benson for Beds, Craig will absolutely do a, we maybe get him to do a review of the Mattress when it arrives. But yeah, as always, it's been emotional. We will catch you all on the next episode of the Dopcast.